Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, February 9th, 2019. This is episode 1564. While you're listening to the show today, would you mind doing our yearly TWiT survey? It's how we get to know our audience better. It helps us with ad sales and planning new programming, and we do have new programming in the pipes. All you have to do, it takes a few minutes. You can literally do it while you're listening. Just go to twit.to/survey19. twit.to/survey19. We are not collecting personal information about you. We don't want to know anything personal. We just want to get a better idea of who's out there. And I thank you in advance. And now, on with the show. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks, the all-in-one cloud accounting solution helping small business owners thrive. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. Yeah, it's Tech Guy time. Time to talk computers and the internet and, you know, home theater, digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all, you know, Jim Crackery, doodads, G-Jaws, all those things that are mussing up your life. You know, for a long time we said this is going to make life easier. Does it make life easier? Sometimes I think it'd be easier just to go back to a horse and buggy. Of course, I never had to clean up after a horse, so maybe not. Maybe the grass is always greener on the other side of the stable. I don't know. But this is what we talk about, and one of the things that constantly comes up is how can I get this stuff working better? I'll be glad to do my best to help you right here. Our phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's a toll-free number in the U.S. and Canada. That's one thing that's a lot better now, toll-free. You don't even need to say that anymore because most people calling on phones don't pay anything extra for long distance, right? Internationally, you might, and that's why it's probably more important to the international folks that it's toll-free in the U.S. because you could use Skype out or something like that to call, and it would cost you nothing. And you'd get advice worth every penny of that. 888-ASK-LEO. Did you see, by the way, website techguylabs.com. Did you see Kashmir Hill is a writer for, she does a lot of stuff. I guess this is a Gizmodo article. And she wrote an article. She decided she was going to try to eliminate what she calls the big five from her life. Amazon, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and Apple. Wow. Now, remember, she's a tech writer. Wow. So she had a friendly geek write some software that would literally make sure that any domains that were owned by those five were blocked in her home and her work and on her phone. In fact, she switched from Windows, because that's a Microsoft product, and Macintosh, because that's an Apple product, both of those for verboten. She switched to a Linux laptop made by Purism. The idea is Purism has decided to do privacy-forward laptops, and so they, you know, disconnect everything. And of course, you can't use an Android phone, and you can't use an iPhone. So she switched to a Nokia phone, like a flip phone. Actually, it wasn't. It was one of those candy bar, very pretty candy bar phones. And she decided, I'm going to try this. Can you imagine doing that in your life? I'm going to try this. She said, I wind up placing a lot of phone calls this week because texting is so annoying on the Nokia. Remember this before smartphones? You had to use something called T9, which was a predictive text thing. And you would type, so if you wanted to type the letter A, you would have to type 1. Because that's where A, B, and C are on the dial. If you wanted C, you'd have to type 1 three times or twice. 1, 2, 3 times. And remember texting like that? Remember that? That's why texting was not big in the U.S. Because that's how we did it. No. Oh. Can't use Google for a contact, so she exports all her contacts. And the Nokia phone doesn't hold more than a couple hundred, so she whittles her 8,000 contacts down to 143 people. Oy, boy. She can't use her car radio system because she drives a Ford, a Fusion, and it uses Microsoft as the operating system, Microsoft Car. There goes your music. You can't really play music on the Nokia phone either, right? In fact, can she watch TV? Barely. She has to watch cable networks. She runs into all sorts of little problems, too, because, for instance, she's trying to email an attachment that's too big for ProtonMail, which is the privacy-focused email solution that she switched to. But you can't use even things like Dropbox because they live on Amazon. This is a very, interlocked world, and if you're not going to use anything from Amazon, that means you can't use any services that use Amazon, and almost everybody does. Essentially, she said, this is the worst worst month of my life. Something not delightful is my Nokia's 3310 camera takes terrible dark photos. Terrible. Yeah, I remember those. Ugh. Bad color. In short, and I don't think she meant to write this way. I don't think she, you might say, oh, well, yeah, she's basically hired by Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, and Facebook to write, my life was a living hell without you. But I think if you just do the thought experiment yourself, it wouldn't be much fun, would it? And yet, you know, aren't we all a little bit worried about what the intrusion of these big companies into our life might mean? Do you really want five companies to control every facet of your life? Worse, do you want them to be able to follow you around? In Germany, they've just ordered Facebook. Germany's competition regulator just ordered Facebook to restrict how it collects and combines data about its users unless you as a user say yes, okay. And somebody wrote an article saying this completely destroys Facebook's business model. It's true. Facebook makes its money by knowing more about you than anybody else and then using that to sell advertising. Facebook, of course, didn't claim foul play. They claim that the German regulator overstepped the mark by pursuing a data privacy matter that Facebook says falls under the remit of another regulator. They have 1 month to challenge the ruling before it becomes legally effective. And, of course, you do it in Germany. You kind of have to do it everywhere. It's hard for Facebook just to do that in Germany. If the order is upheld, the company has to develop technical solutions to ensure it complies within 4 months. And if it doesn't, thanks to the wonderful GDPR, it could, in theory, be fined up to 10% of its annual revenue. That's a lot of money. Revenue, not profit. In future, explained Andreas Mundt, Facebook will no longer be allowed to force its users to agree to the practically unrestricted collection and assigning of non-Facebook data to their Facebook user accounts. So you'll have to, if you're in Germany, and you know this might spread beyond Germany, it's kind of a signpost to other regulators in Europe and maybe even around the world. Maybe we should do this. Let's see how this works out. Facebook says, look, collecting all this data about you. And by the way, Facebook also wants to merge the WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook Messenger data along with the Facebook data. So they got a very rich data stream about everything you do online. Collecting all this data lets us show ads that are more relevant. They help advertisers measure how successful their advertising is. They make it easier for Facebook to identify fake accounts. You told us you didn't want fake accounts. You want us to combat terrorism, right? No, we are just saying that the user should be able to say no. And, you know, by the way, if you said no, Facebook could say, okay, you can't use our service. I think that's what will end up happening, right? You either agree to this or you can't use Facebook. Wouldn't it be nice if you didn't have to say, I'm not going to use Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. I'm just going to restrict their ability to collect data on me, and then I'll use them. Wouldn't that be nice? But that's kind of, isn't that free riding on those services? Somebody has to pay for those services. We have ads, right, on our show. Of course, we don't collect that kind of data about you either. I don't know who's listening when you're listening. We know kind of. You're not supposed to talk about how ratings work in radio. So I will avoid talking about the details, but you could easily find them out. And it's, I don't think it's saying anything out of school to say it's not checking every single person who's listening. It's checking a small sample and then projecting statistically based on what that sample does, what it must be, what the ratings, what the audience must be, their age, their income, and all that. So, boy, we don't know much about you, really. We certainly don't know anything about you personally. Which is, by the way, good for the tech guy, because one thing I know, if you're listening to this show, you're a geek. You're interested in technology, right? Why do you think all our ads are for technology products? That seems to work all right for us. We'll take a break, take your calls in just a bit. 8888-ASK-LEO, I promise. No salesman will call. I will not collect data about you when you call us. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little teeny, teeny, weeny time out. And then we will come back, and I will take your calls. Don't forget, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. She's a intelligent person, a fine person with generous impulses and a love for all mankind. How about that?
You've just PC'd up Brick House.
I PC'd up Brick. I'm a PC up Brick House. Wouldn't that be fun? That'd be fun to go back through all
change
the misogynist, sexist stuff out there, change the lyrics. It would lose some of its oomph.
How would you change the one that caused so much controversy over Christmas? Baby, it's cold outside. What would your new lyrics be?
Well, if you had the woman singing it to the man, that would help, right?
There you go.
I have to go home.
No, stay. Here, have this drink.
My parents will worry.
No, just take off your clothes.
But I have to go. I don't know. It's possible to fix any song. It's just, does it fix it?
No.
Or does it ruin it?
It takes away the...
Someday we'll all be grown up to understand that, it's a sexist, piggy song, but it's good. I like it. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. I don't. I wish I did, but
leave
fortunately...
well enough alone.
This is why I don't do traditional news talk radio.
Yeah.
I was listening to news talk radio yesterday in the car, coming home from the airport. And I thought, this is why it's so hard to do news talk radio.
Well, because, it's all politics right now.
Well, it's all politics. And honestly, what would probably be more appropriate, which is, well, it's a complicated issue, and there are many factors involved, and we have to think about all of the different factors, isn't nearly as compelling as, you stink! And your policies stink!
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Well, it's all the same. It's because hot takes, it's what Twitter is all about. Hot takes work so much better. They're so much more interesting than reasoned, rational. Let's talk about this.
Right.
And so we live in a land of hot takes. But this show is lukewarm takes.
lukewarm takes on tech.
No hot takes here. And it's funny because I try to do that when people ask, well, what laptop should I get? What I want to say is, well, it depends.
Well, it does.
And that's the answer. That's the correct answer, but it's bad radio. So the right thing to do would be say, get a Lenovo or whatever.
Well, you have
pick
to
one.
Discuss with them what they need it for.
I know. That's probably why I'll never be a major radio celebrity just a weekend tech guy.
Yeah, you're just looking for compliments.
Operating behind the scenes. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Did you have a good week?
Yeah,
good.
I did.
You are in to do one thing and one thing only, besides cheer me up. Two things and two things only. three things. You're here to cheer me up, to be a brick house, and to answer the phone.
And answering the phone, I did. David,
can I just say I don't play brick house? That's not me.
He's not doing that.
It's not my... I mean, it's Damien plays that, and it's good, good on you, Damien. I'd have no problem with that. That's fine.
Thank you.
He says thank you. We should find another song, though. Maybe 5'2", eyes of blue, but could she? No, that won't work.
It won't work for me. I mean, the blue
You're
part.
You're a little taller.
Yeah, I'm a little taller than 5'2".
Who should I start with?
How about David in L.A.? He wants to upload videos to Facebook. The files are too big. He knows he's got to modify them, but he doesn't know how.
But how?
How do you do that?
How, Mr. Wizard?
Thanks for taking the call, Will.
Oh, my pleasure. Welcome, David.
Great. So I have a Nikon camera that Paul Simon did not give me.
Does it have Ektachrome in it? Or Kodachrome?
So I shoot these really fun videos, like at concerts and stuff.
Sure.
And no problem with the computer. When I try to upload them on Facebook, it's just like I'm going to be collecting Social Security before these things load. And a friend said, well, you have to modify them. So I go, I'm going to call Leo to find out how do you modify a video.
Yeah. So... all video is compressed. If video were uncompressed, especially the high quality video you're shooting, probably either HD or maybe even 4K video in that nice Nikon camera, if you didn't compress it, you couldn't even record it, let alone transmit it in a reasonable amount of time or upload it. It's just too big. So all video is compressed. And then, of course, video that's intended to be played back on the internet has to be compressed even more. Mm-hmm. Scrunched up. And the idea of compression is how much can we scrunch it up without making it look scrunched up? Mm-hmm. And there are all sorts of really, you know, interesting, innovative ways to do that. We call them codecs for compression decompression software. And there are numerous codecs. What Facebook, and I'll extend this to YouTube and any other site that posts video, do is actually kind of amazing. They take your video, and what's taking time is they're doing something called transcoding it. They're taking it from the original format and re-encoding it into a format that can be streamed over the internet without, you know, delay and burps and the infamous buffering. And what both YouTube and Facebook do that you probably can't do is I read somewhere YouTube's doing it in something like 15 different formats. Because remember, both Facebook and YouTube are going to be seen on small screen phones and big screen TVs and everything in between. So they often make multiple versions, and that takes time. It would take time on your side, too. And here's the issue. You aren't going to do that. You can only upload one copy of this. So, you know, if time weren't important, I would upload the best quality that Facebook would take and let them, using very sophisticated tools, make the appropriate sizes. Same thing with YouTube. If you want this to happen faster, you would want to make it a smaller file to begin with. Mm-hmm. And what you should play with, and there are lots of tools to do this. The one I recommend is a free tool from some French schoolboys. It's called Handbrake. H-A-N-D-B-R, like a handbrake in a car, B-R-A-K-E, handbrake.fr. And it's a transcoding tool. It actually is doing exactly the same thing Facebook and Google do behind the scenes. You can pick a format that gives you what you think is very good-looking video at a much smaller size and start with that. I would say start with the best quality that you can tolerate Facebook's delay, because you want to give them the best quality to start with. But it's a great thing to play with, handbrake.fr, and you can, in effect, see what Facebook's doing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And here he is, my friends, back from I hope you took a nice week off and enjoyed yourself.
Well, it was a family obligation.
Oh, that sounds worse. Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek. If you're going to take time off, never do it for a family obligation. Do it for...
Well, I wish.
Yeah. You have to, right? That's life. Mm-hmm. Scott is our guru of big screen TVs, surround sound. He's a musician, if you can call a tuba music. no, he plays anything.
Hey, now, wait a second.
He told me he'll play anything with wind in it.
That's right. That's right. Anything with wind, I'll give it a shot.
That's a joke that just writes itself right there.
I know.
And you, I guess, are getting ready for the Grammys tomorrow.
I am. Well, I'm not going to the Grammys. I have been a couple times, and it's pretty interesting. It's pretty exciting, but I'm not going this year. However, I did get to go to the producers and engineers wing of the Recording Academy, which hands out the Grammys. The producers and engineers wing, or P&E wing, puts on a party during Grammy week every year.
Isn't
Grammy
it always week, that way that the really interesting nerd awards, those are never on the TV.
No, that's true. That's true.
They do those in private, hidden away.
Well, this wasn't really part of the Grammy Awards. This was a party at the Village Recorders. So it's a venerable, cool, famous old recording studio. And they have great food in every room and people demonstrating stuff. And they honor somebody every year in the music industry. Give them a Lifetime Achievement Award or something like that. This year was Willie Nelson.
Oh, what fun. I love
and
Willie.
It was really fun. He was there. He didn't do very much. He's like 85 now. Yeah. Speaking, we were talking about John Williams earlier, you know, and you hope you're productive. You remain productive in your later years.
John Williams, 87th birthday, the great soundtrack.
Yeah.
87th birthday was yesterday.
Yep. Yep. And happy birthday to John Williams.
So many great movie soundtracks, including all the Star Wars movies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Willie Nelson, I think, just released his 69th album.
Did I ever tell you my Willie Nelson story?
No.
We had him on the show. I felt bad because, you know, he brought one of his old guitar. He has one that's so beat up. It's got holes in the wood and
that
everything.
That big hole in it, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's got a name for that one. I can't remember. But anyway.
Either, but he did play that one on last Wednesday.
Yeah. And I asked him if I could hold it. And he was such a gentleman. He said yes. And I realized afterwards that was incredibly rude. So, Willie, I apologize. And then he invited me on the bus.
Oh, man.
So, I went and I got on the bus. It was a little smoky in there.
A little smoky in there.
I got on the bus. And he gave me a red bandana and a bottle of Old Whiskey River.
Oh,
sent me off into
man.
The night. I was, I'll never forget that. I am a big Willie Nelson fan.
Well, you know what? In the band that played for his ceremony, it was the Dave Matthews Band.
I love
which
them
is
too.
Itself a great band, and who should be sitting in with them but two of Willie Nelson's sons?
Oh, isn't that neat?
It was really neat, and
Trigger,
one of them,
the guitar is called Trigger.
Trigger, I think you're right.
Like Roy Rogers' horse.
One of his sons was singing, and I was going, "Wait a second, where's Willie?" It sounded exactly like Willie Nelson.
Yeah,
and
that's neat.
It was really amazing. Amazing. Really, so we had a great time there. And there have been a bunch of other Grammy Week events leading up to tomorrow's show, which is really quite amazing. It's my favorite award show. That may be difficult for people to understand. Well, why do you even like an award show? Well, I like this one because all the performances are entirely live. And that to me really says something that, you know, instead of all canned music or stuff like that, they're actually performing live. And the technical infrastructure is quite amazing. There's going to be 35 songs performed live on the show on 17 different stage setups. And the logistics of getting stage setups moved around here and there is really quite amazing. It takes 3 days to do all that rehearsing. There's like 400 microphones.
Holy cow.
On stage. They use 3 megawatts of power all told for this presentation. It's mixed in 5.1. This is really interesting. They mix it in 5.1. They have 2 trucks. It's at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, right? Which is this giant coliseum. That's not a coliseum. It's a sports arena. And there's a big underground area. And they drive semis down into this underground area, the bowels of the Staples Center, and set up these mixing consoles. And everyone's mixing in 5.1, and it folds down to 2-channel when it has to. But they aren't mixing for that. They're mixing for 5.1.
So would we be able to listen to it that way?
Yeah,
tomorrow?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
How your cable channel give you that? Or?
Yeah, it will.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that pretty commonplace now? I guess it is.
It is.
I remember when TV started doing stereo. They'd have that logo.
Yeah, right.
Stereo.
Stereo.
So now many shows are 5.1.
5.1, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Exactly right. I'm looking forward to the day when we actually get Atmos.
You love that. You love that Atmos. The upward.
I do love that
downward
Atmos.
Downward firing speakers. Speakers in your ceiling. Yeah.
Speakers in your ceiling or speakers firing up to your ceiling and reflecting back down. Either way. But yeah, it's an amazing live performance venue, live performance show that is just takes hundreds of people and.
And it's not been without its mix-ups, flaws, screw-ups, right?
Exactly right, which is part of the excitement, you know?
It's hard to do live.
Is it going to go well?
Yeah.
It is. It's really hard to do live.
And I often, I feel for the sound engineers, or the because I know that they're freaking out when somebody can't hear their backing track or the microphone's not right or.
Yep.
And it's kind of notorious. It's kind of fun. There have been many, many sound problems. Even last year, somebody said, the sound guy better be updating his LinkedIn. And this is the problem now.
Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah, Twitter. Exactly. So Katie.
People will jump on that immediately. Yeah.
Katy Perry couldn't hear. And remember, she had to press her earphone in. I guess this was a couple of years ago. Adele. Sounded so bad, we thought, oh, Adele can't sing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she can, but she was just getting audio from the auditorium.
Right, and not the piano, so she couldn't hear what her pitch reference was supposed
to be. Yeah, terrible.
So, you know, it's not without its flaws, for sure, but that's part of what
that
makes
it... Part of the fun?
It's part of the fun.
Fire up Twitter and watch the Grammys.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of controversy over it. You know, there are a number of people who declined to perform, including Drake and Childish Gambino. That's one of my favorite groups.
He won't perform?
No, he's not. He declined. He said, no, I'm not going to do it. And
is there an issue with politics or is it about the sound or?
No. I think it's more political.
Yeah,
But I'm not sure exactly what the issue is.
Well, the record industry is not beloved by many artists.
No, it's true.
Right?
It's true. It's true.
And while in the old days, it didn't matter whether you loved them or not, you had to use them. Nowadays, thanks to the internet, you can bypass them entirely. So.
Yep, it's absolutely true. Yeah. It's absolutely true. Still in all, I like watching it. It's a great spectacle. The music's all live.
Who knows where the microphone will drop out? I remember
exactly.
I was watching Metallica one year, and his and James's mic was just not there. He was screaming, but it didn't matter. Yeah.
Alicia Keys is the host, and I really like her music.
She's great. I think that was a very good choice.
I agree.
Everybody loves totally Alicia Keys. Yeah.
Yep.
She's on fire.
And of course, don't forget Cardi B. She'll be there.
Oh, I thought she said she wasn't going.
No, she's one of the ones that is.
Oh, she wouldn't do the Super Bowl, but she would do the Grammys. It's very confusing.
Yeah.
You got to really pay attention. Scott Wilkinson, he's our home theater geek, joins us each week. Have a great week, Scott.
Thanks, you too.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's right. Cardi B. What'd you think of the Super Bowl? You didn't even say anything about the Super Bowl halftime. Did you at least watch that?
I did. It was so boring.
So awful.
So awful. And, I really had nothing.
I like Maroon 5, but it just fell flat.
It fell so flat. Yeah. I know.
Especially after Gaga. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure Gaga's going to be at the Grammy singing Shallow.
Oh, good.
So that's going to be good. I love Lady Gaga.
Me too.
I was bummed that I went to CES, of course, and she has a new show. She has a new residence in Vegas, but it wasn't playing the week I was there.
We saw it last week.
Oh, did you really?
We saw Enigma. Yeah, we didn't see
Enigma.
The piano. We didn't see the piano one. You must go.
Is it good?
OMG. What I like about her, and I think you and Joanna especially will appreciate it, is she's a great singer and songwriter.
Yes,
you know, she stands on her own. She could sit down with the piano, in fact, often does, and just play and sing.
In fact, that's the other half of her residence.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other show.
We
got to
go back and see it.
I really want to.
So she could totally do that. But she's also this amazing performance artist.
Yes.
And so you get both in Enigma.
Yes.
And it's really amazing. The only thing bad,
yeah,
and I think it's just logistics, There are four or five costume changes that are fairly lengthy because it's Gaga. So yeah, you know, the band in effect plays an entire instrumental song waiting for
while
her to come
back.
Changing.
Interesting.
In order to stitch it together, and I'm sure this was her idea, she has a cartoon character called Enigma. I don't think I'm spoiling anything. That does a lot of talking.
And,
I could do without all of that. But it's a high, you know, with Gaga, everything's high concept. It's a high concept show.
Sure.
And it's
sure.
really neat to see these theaters that are built for the performers.
Yeah. Where is this one? I forget which hotel this
Park
one's
MGM.
In. Park MGM. Okay. Used to be Monte Carlo, right?
Right. And we stayed there. We stayed at the Nomad, which is the healthy Park MGM upstairs. It was very nice.
What still, does that mean, that the healthy
no
Park
smoking. It was four no smoking. It's healthy. And but it was really
it
fun. We had a great... Oh, we had so much fun. That's right. I haven't seen you since we came back from that. Yeah,
that's right. When was that? Just last week?
The week before last. That's it. That's the phrase I was looking for. So you want to stick around for the top?
Happy to do
I
so.
I can give it to you now, but it's only about a minute and a half left. So.
That's all right.
Yeah. Go see. Yeah, if you love Gaga. I didn't know you loved Gaga.
I do love Gaga. I think
have you seen her live?
Great. I never have, no.
Yeah. At one point in the show, she says, oh, I got to find out. How many of you have ever seen me live before? And it's pretty much everybody. And she's like blown away because her hardcore fans, it's like the Dead or what anything else, they see every show, right?
Right. They follow her around.
They follow her. And there's a mosh pit that's filled with the hardcore fans. And then in a tribute to Las Vegas showrooms, and they had this at the... J-Lo concert too. There's like three rows of table seating.
Yes. That are little cocktail tables.
Yeah, but they're dumb. And then we were the first row right behind that, which I thought was fine.
That's good.
Nobody in front of us. And it was really, really fun. And it was,
was
so good. Yeah.
I love spectacle too.
You'll love this. I've told this before. Forgive me, folks, but we're sitting there and the concert's about to begin. Everybody said she's on time. She was not on time. She's like half an hour late. But I think they try to be on time. Anyway, and then all of a sudden the people in the mosh pit are and I'm going, oh, must be somebody in a costume back there. I don't see anything. Lisa said, oh, she's going to come in on a string. I said, no, she's not. She says, yes, she is. And she did. So I don't want to spoil
it over the audience.
But when you start, look back when you're beginning at the beginning of the concert. All right, I got to run. I will talk to you in about 10.
You bet.
Thank you, sir. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number, line 2, Robert in Los Angeles. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging on. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Hey, I'm more of a food geek than a tech geek.
You can be both, and, you know. In fact, many tech geeks are food geeks.
Okay. Well, anyways, I got this phone. It has unlimited internet on it. And I called their tech support, and they said, oh, just tether it. And I was like, was ist das tethering you?
Was ist das? So there's two ways to use the internet connection on your phone on a laptop or tablet. The more common these days is hotspot. You might have heard that. Tethering is a hotspot, but you use a USB cable instead. Most people just use the hotspot. If you look in your phone settings, you'll see, what kind of phone do you have?
Cheap.
Okay, cheap phone. You may or may not.
I don't think it.
Oh, yeah. You probably have to use tethering on a flip phone. The hotspotting is part of the, you know, most smartphones do that now. But in the old days, we used tethering, which means you need that special cable, right? There's a special cable for your flip phone. Most flip phones did not use traditional USB connectors.
Okay.
And you should also be aware that the phone company may charge you extra for tethering. Sometimes they charge a additional monthly fee, like $20. Sometimes they actually charge you like by the minute. So you should find out. I mean, I presume that the representative was trying to be helpful, not trying to make money, but it can be very expensive. So before you use it, I take it you called and asked them and said, how can I use my phone for my internet?
Right.
Yeah. So, old flip phones, because they don't know a whole lot about old flip phones. So old flip phones can be done to tether. What I would do is I'd bring it into the store you know, the company store. Who's your carrier?
Mm-hmm. Verizon.
Yeah, so go to the Verizon store. They'll probably somewhere in the back have a cable, if you don't have your cable, that you can use for tethering. But do, when you go in there, ask, you know, what is the cost? What are the limits? That kind of thing.
Okay.
And the, now, and so then, if you get a cable, that means you have to use it with a device that will work with a cable. And it'll usually be that proprietary plug on the flip phone to USB. So that's the other side of that equation. Tethering requires often software on the other side. Do you want to tether it to a laptop?
Yeah. Let's see. That brings me to my second question. I had questions about the Chromebook and its capabilities.
Lovely. It's a lovely thing.
Okay. I mean, so, does it have a CD port? Or?
No. You're thinking it's not a laptop. Don't think in laptop. Basically, it's a Chrome browser with a keyboard and a screen, a touch screen. And it can only do the things a Chrome can do. So you can add extensions. Most modern Chromebooks will also support some Android applications. So if you can get it on an Android phone, you can do it on a Chromebook. That actually expands the capabilities quite a bit, but often these Android apps aren't very well designed for a Chromebook environment. Here's why I always recommend Chromebooks. If you find on your computer you spend most of your time in the browser, or all of the time in the browser, you're not editing videos, you're not building rocket ships, but you're just doing email in the browser and surfing, a Chromebook is more secure and more reliable, much more secure than either Windows or Mac. So a lot of schools use Chromebooks. It's very popular in education. It's the number one platform in education easily now, because students can do all the work they need. And by the way, the way a Chromebook works, it does require internet because you're using Google services for your word processing, spreadsheets, all of that. And you have to be able to get online with it. So Chromebook isn't a great choice if you don't have internet access.
Okay. Well, I mean, I will if I am able to hook up my phone.
Yeah, you don't want to do it that way. That's the most expensive kind of internet you can get, and it's not, especially in a flip phone, it won't be very fast. So one of the things you can do is get a Chromebook that has built-in LTE. That's the data connection that your phone company provides. And you pay, in effect, it's like a phone, but it's you pay just for data. So usually it's cheaper than a phone. And then everywhere you go, your Chromebook has internet access without you attaching any cords or doing anything with your phone. That is a nice solution. So look for a Chromebook with LTE in it. They'll cost a little bit more because they have to put a radio in there. I think the Acers and the Samsungs, I know the Samsungs have LTE, the Samsung Chromebook Plus. And I think the Acer Chromebooks also have LTE. What you'll do, in fact, you could even go to Verizon and say, do you guys offer a Chromebook? And then you could add it into your Verizon account. I would take a look at the my favorite is the Samsung Chromebook Plus version 2 with LTE. It's a very nice. Acer also has a Chromebook with LTE. And that's great. That means that Chromebook has its own built-in internet access, just like your phone does, kind of.
Okay, yeah, it's just this phone has a screen about the size of a postage.
Yeah, I mean, it might be time for a new phone, too. Look at the, they're very inexpensive. The Motorola just announced its G7 phones, and they're a couple of $100, between $200 and $300. And they're really good smartphones, and they will also do hotspotting, which means turning them into Wi-Fi access points. Something your flip phone won't. So I think there are a lot of options for you. It might be time to set aside the flip phone and move into the 21st century.
Well, the problem with the smartphones is, for one, my fingers have a stuttering problem.
Oh, okay. So if you can't use a touch screen, stick with a flip phone and look at a Chromebook. I think that's a very good way to go. And make sure you get a Chromebook with its own internet.
Okay. Question number two. Could I go down to that place with a spaceship stuck in it and poke around, or should I do something like that so I can see it physically?
You got me on the spaceship. Is that Sonic Hamburgers? I don't know. What has a spaceship stuck in it?
Well, it's in North Hollywood. It's an electronics store.
Yeah, I don't know the name. Go down. You can go there. Yeah, they'll have Chromebooks. Best Buy has them. What's the name of it? Fry's. Oh, Fry's has a spaceship in it?
In Burbank?
I didn't know that. Well, yeah, Fry's would have them. It's like what? A flying saucer has crashed into the front of it. Why didn't I hear about this? So, yeah, Fry's is great. So, Fry's, Best Buy, the big box stores like Costco and Sam's Club, they also have Chromebooks. And you can get them online, but I guess you're not online yet. So, you don't want to do it on your flip phone. That would be hard.
Well, I'm disabled, so I can get low-cost internet. I was thinking about that.
There you go. And yeah, you may ask your Verizon provider about Lifeline Internet. They may offer that exactly, for that. So I would check with them as well on that. Since you have, I can't believe I've never been to the Fry's store in Burbank. Now I got to make a trip. I'm so ignorant. Scott Wilkinson says they have aliens throughout the store. I think that's just the employees. That's not a nice thing to say about them. Yeah, I like Chromebooks for a lot of people. But if you don't have internet, this is a good solution. And the nice thing about Chromebooks, they're a lot less than a laptop. Let's take a little time out. We're going to come back and answer more of your calls at 8888-ASK-LEO. Our website, techguylabs.com, has all the show notes there. There's no sign up. It's, there's no fee. It's just wide open. techguylabs.com. And we'll be back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we give you Scott Wilkinson.
Thank you so very much.
The man of the hour. Let me get your timer here.
Thank you. The timer is very good.
Oh, it's helpful. I know. Yes.
Yes. Some people in the chat room have remarked that the Fry's in Burbank is sort of the day the Earth stood still theme.
Oh, that's fun.
They have a Gort robot in there.
Tatu barada nicto.
Nicto. Yes.
That's fun. I like that.
But they got other aliens in there too, and they've got one great thing as you walk in. There's an army jeep that's been sliced in half by a laser beam.
Wow! Wow!
It's really fun. It's really fun.
All yours, my friend.
Thank you so very much. Oh, I miss Tower Records too. Who was in the chat room just saying they miss Tower Records? Marsworm, yes. Who I've been chatting with in the chat room actually. He brings up an issue with Vizio TVs that I was not aware of. Let's see. The issue is turning back on after it auto turns off when no signal is detected. It won't turn back on, apparently. I have to unplug the power and wait 60 seconds and turn it back on. I had not heard of that before. So I'm sorry I can't help you, but I will contact Vizio and ask them what the heck's going on here? Because that does not sound good to me. Beers on Me is asking if I'd had a chance to check out the Qobuz. I think that's how you say it. Qobuz, high-res music service. Sort of like Tidal, I would assume. I haven't had a chance to check it out, but he's been enjoying it very much. So, good for you. Anyway, let's see. Ooh, R Deluxe. Do I need a backlight for my TV? Well, probably yes. This has to do with the issue that I've talked with Leo about on a number of occasions, called a bias light. So what that is you put a light, some sort of light, behind the TV that illuminates what's behind the TV, hopefully a dark gray or black wall. And the reason for that is to bias the dynamic range of your eyes. So the human visual system has a very wide dynamic range, something like 14 stops, something like that. But at any given moment, all we can what we perceive is about five stops. And that five-stop range moves up and down depending on the amount of ambient light in the environment we're in. This is why when you walk from a walk into a dark theater from a brightly lit outdoors, you can't see much for a little while. Your eyes have to adapt. That dynamic range has to come down. Similarly, and in opposite case, when you walk out of the dark theater into the bright sunlight, you have to squint, right? Because your eyes are not set for that amount of ambient light. Well, the bias light actually resets your visual dynamic range slightly and makes it more comfortable to watch TV. So the answer to the question is ideally yes, especially in a dark room. Now, if you're watching TV in a lighter room with ambient with the lights on, or it's during the day and there's some windows, hopefully not directly behind you and opposite the TV, because that would cause terrible reflections. But otherwise, you don't need a bias light. It's when you're in a dark room that you really need one. And the the other thing I want to make sure you understand about bias lights is they need to be ideally need to be a specific color of white. Now, you've probably heard of Philips and their technology called Ambilight. And Ambilight is exactly that. It's a, basically kind of strip lights or rope lights behind the, along the edges of the TV behind on the back panel. And what Ambilight normally does, what Philips really touts about it, is it changes color according to what's on the screen. So if you have a ocean scene, it'll be blue. And if you have a desert scene, it'll be brown or orange or something like that. This is highly distracting, certainly to me, and not ideal. As far as I remember, and I haven't looked at Philips TVs in a while, but when I last I did, they did have a setting in the Ambilight that was fix it at a certain color and leave it there. And that's what you need to do. You need to fix it, add a certain color of white, even more specifically. That color is technically known as D65. And it's a neutral white. It's the same color of white that was used to create the content you're watching, which is why you want it in your house, because you want to see it the way the content creator saw it. That's my philosophy about TVs, which is why you want to calibrate them or at least set them up basically. And you want this bias light to be D65. Also, it needs to be about 10% of the peak brightness of the screen that you're watching. So LCD TVs have a higher peak brightness than OLEDs. So with an LCD TV, you'd want a brighter, somewhat brighter bias light than you'd want for an OLED. But still, it's only about 10%. So it's not really that bright. It just brings your eyes' dynamic range into where you need it to be. So the answer is yes. Ideally, you do, but you want to be careful about it and do it right. You don't want to just stick a light back, any old light back there, because if it's the wrong color, it'll bias your color receptors to the color that's on the TV. It'll distort what you perceive as the color on the screen. So I do not recommend just sticking any old light back there. If you're going to do it right. Go to a company called CinemaQuest, cinemaquest.com, I believe. Oh, there you go. Silent Partner says, my bias light is powered by USB on the TV. Amazon for $20. There you go. As long as it's pretty close to D65, then you're good. SMEES, acoustic transparent screens are great for backlighting. Well, not great for backlighting, actually. And certainly not for bias lighting, because the light can get through the perforated screen. Yes, that's exactly right. That could be a. There's a mirror wall behind my TV, Marsworm. Sorry to hear
that's
that.
That's terrible.
That's bad.
I use those very nice ambient lights from Hue, the dome.
There you lights. Go.
Yeah,
and you
great.
Can probably tune them to whatever color
yeah,
you want.
You make them whatever color you want, and then you can dim them by voice, which is nice. So
that's really nice.
Yeah, bring it down to like 10%, and it's a nice glow behind the TV. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eric Duckman asked if D65 is the same as 6500K. they're related. They're not the same thing. D65 is a very specific color. 6500K is the color temperature, and it can actually, you can read and measure 6500K, and it can even be a little magenta or a little green. So they're not quite the same thing.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. We are the Tech Guy. I say we because it's not just me. Answering your questions at 8888 Ask Leo. It's also a massive, massive group of tech experts sitting in our chat room at irc.twit.tv, ready to throw out any kind of ideas at all. You're invited to join the Team Tech Guy, yeah, at irc.twit.tv. It's open to all. Also, we get lots of listeners, and those listeners often have answers to your questions, too. So think of this more as a user group for the radio of technology. 8888 Ask Leo. Computers, the internet, home theater. We talk about smartphones and smart watches. Anything with a chip in it. Line three is Fiona in Calabasas, California. Hello, Fiona.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome.
I wonder if I could save a little money. I don't currently have a working computer, and I'm debating between, I like to use my keyboard, my monitor, and my case from an old DSL thing and put new guts in it.
Yeah.
Save anything over a laptop.
Yeah, you don't need the case. If you've got a keyboard, mouse, and monitor, there are a number of solutions. Have you ever seen a Mac Mini? It's just a little, I don't know how to describe it. It's a small computer that doesn't come with a mouse, keyboard, and monitor. It just comes with a little computer. There's a number of companies make these kinds of things. And you plug in whatever you've got, and now you've got a computer. There's Windows versions of that. They call them NUCs, N-U-C's, the new unit of computing. Intel created it. And then there's also Chromeboxes, which are the same idea. They're just little kind of breadbox computers that that do a lot of work and save you a lot of money. So do you have, what would you like to do with this device?
I'm not a power user. I don't do gaming. I don't do movie editing or anything like that. Mostly words, a little bit of art, and very few photos.
How do you do your, tell me about your art. Do you draw on the screen or?
I don't like touching screens. I really don't.
Okay.
So
you'll use a mouse?
Yes.
Okay.
I prefer a mouse over a rollerball thing.
And what painting program do you use? Or did you use?
I outline and design designs that go on gourds and weaving.
Oh, how cool. So anything you can do in a browser, you could do on a Chromebox. It's basically, as I was talking last hour, it's basically the Chrome browser in a very... I usually recommend it to people because it's so secure. And for most people, it's enough. They do everything online in the browser, email, surfing, and all that. But you have this one little extra thing, this design thing.
I don't do it heavily, and I recently lost sight in my left eye, so I... doing it less, but also I want to stream movies.
Yeah, and almost anything, including a Chromebox, can stream movies from Amazon, Netflix, the usual suspects.
I've had Firefox.
Do you want to stream movies from the internet, or do you have the movies physically with you?
No, I want to stream them from the internet.
Yeah, good. Thank goodness. Okay. Yeah, sometimes people have a lot of movies on a hard drive or something, and they want to watch them. I guess you could even do that on a Chromebook. So a Chromebox would be the least expensive choice. We're talking around $300 to $500 because you're going to use your existing mouse, keyboard, and monitor. You may eventually want to upgrade to a bigger monitor.
Big monitors because my sight isn't great.
Yeah, and I'm guessing your existing monitor is probably not that big.
No.
Yeah. So the good news is monitors have gotten very inexpensive and very good in the last 5 years. So for another, Go ahead.
What's the best I should have inside this thing? You know.
You don't need much. And a Chromebox. It depends what you're doing. If you're, I have the Mac Mini here, and this thing is way overpriced and way overkill for you. On the other hand, if money isn't an object, yeah, of course it is. There's nobody, even Jeff Bezos, money is an object. So these are great choice if you really have needs for the power, and you don't, and you have a lot of money to spend. So I'm going to put aside the Mac Mini. I'm also going to put aside a Windows machine, because honestly, I don't think any normal user should be forced to use Windows. There's just too many security issues. It's too difficult to keep it up to date. It's really more for business users and geeks. So for you, I think, I honestly think a Chromebox would be a very good choice. And the good news about Chromeboxes is you don't need as much horsepower. I'm going to recommend for you, you can write this down, an Asus Chromebox.
Yes, I'm on it.
Good. ASUS, so you'll know the name. Chromebox 3.
Plus, I have a monitor already, remember?
Yeah. And Asus makes very good monitors. And you know, if in time you want to get a better monitor, you could do that, but it'll work just fine with your existing monitor. How old? Well, it should. How old is that monitor?
I think it's a 2012.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's an HDMI monitor, right?
I don't know. I suppose.
Yeah, that would be the issue. Older monitors use weird connectors. But almost certainly, if it's 2012, it will be an HDMI connector. And that's what's on the back of this Chromebox. It has an i3 processor that is a very capable processor for you. It comes with 8 gigabytes of RAM. Do you have internet access in your house?
Not yet, because I was at DSL, and that's not around anymore.
Yeah, so you're going to need to get that, too. That's actually maybe a bigger expense than the Chromebook, unfortunately.
What about cable? Cable versus internet? Is there a
cable's
there?
Usually DSL is limited by the technology to a somewhat lower speed. Cable's almost always faster, but it's also almost always more expensive. So plan $60 a month for cable. You can get from DSL Extreme and other companies. You can get a DSL for a third that.
They're the ones that let me down. I'm not going there.
I know. They were a longtime sponsor of the show, and they got acquired. And I'm afraid that the service
seems... What happened?
Pardon me?
Okay, because I went with them because of your...
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Sponsor, and then they started letting me down. And
yeah, they got acquired. A new company took over, and I feel like they kind of lost their way.
They did.
Yeah, so your phone company will also offer DSL.
That's AT&T.
AT&T, that's right. And in fact, one of the reasons DSL Extreme struggled is because the phone companies really don't like to let other companies run on their wires. They're required to by the FCC, but it's not a happy relationship. And so it's a struggle for a third-party provider. So it's not all DSL Extreme's fault, if I'm going to be fair about it. So maybe get it from AT&T. They'll cost more, unfortunately, but not much more. I bet you they have $25, $30 plans. And for most people, that's sufficient.
You said 8 gigabytes of RAM. Anything else I should look for and be sure I got?
Well, I'm just telling you what this comes with. It's got very nice graphics. The range, you can get a less expensive one with a Celeron and a little less memory for $231. And you can get one with a little more memory, the 8 gigs of RAM and an i3 for $419. It's called the Asus Chromebox 3. Either one would be just fine. It should work fine with your monitor. That's the only caveat, is that the monitor has to have an HDMI port. With the right connectors, you could use a VGA monitor as well. So it would work with anything. It's just more complicated. You'd have to get some additional connectors.
I don't want complicated.
I know. Who does? I don't blame you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Princess Fiona.
Bye-bye.
Take care. You can tell I'm a little bit of a fan of the Chrome OS, because it's just safer. And for unless you need more, and you know if you need more, it's a good solution. And I'm pretty sure Fiona could do the design stuff she wants to do with. There are Chrome apps and Google apps that would probably do that drawing stuff that she needs to do. So I think even that would be just fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll take a little break, and we'll be back with more of your calls in just a little bit. You stay right here. 8888. Ask Leo. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at FreshBooks. If you're in business for yourself, you know the worst part of the business, at least was for me, at the end of the month when you have to send out the invoices. I hated that. Sometimes I'd put it off, which means you don't get paid. FreshBooks changed all that for me. I was one of their first customers, and I still think FreshBooks is the best solution for any freelancer who, and by the way, it's more than making invoices, who wants to keep track of their money. It's really online, ridiculously easy to use online accounting software. For the first time, you'll know if you're making a profit at any given time. It's full industry standard accounting. I don't like to say that. I don't want to scare you away. But you're just making invoices and everything else happens. Like the FreshBooks app on your iPhone or Android phone, you take pictures of the receipt. Boom, they go in the FreshBooks. FreshBooks will even call up your bank every day, download the expenses. So now you've got receivables, you've got income, you've got expenses, you've got everything you need to do. You know, tax time comes, you've got all the reports, the accounting reports like general ledger, balance sheet. FreshBooks is always adding new features. Now you can do proposals with beautiful, rich text content and images. You could take e-signatures from your clients when they accept the proposal. All of this just because you're a FreshBooks subscriber. Ooh, best though, you can accept payments online, which means your invoice can say, pay you. They press a button, the client pays you. You get paid on average twice as fast. FreshBooks integrates with everything you use, like Acuity Schedule, PieSync, MailChimp, Everlance. You could do time and hours. There's a big start button on the website or on the phone to keep track of time and hours, different prices for different projects. Everything you need, because over the years, with feedback from their great customer base, FreshBooks has just gotten better and better and better. Avoid the tax time scramble next year. Go to FreshBooks.com/TechGuy. And try it free for 30 days. Just do me a favor, put the tech guy in the how did you hear about us section. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. Effortless invoicing and accounting. It just happens. It's like magic. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. Tell them you heard it on the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Cheryl in Palmdale, California. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I was listening
to the show last Saturday, and you had a caller who talked about Yubico and the safe key because
yeah.
you said two-factor.
Yeah.
Not that hot because they could, like, clone your phone or something. So I looked into that, but my phone is a Moto G6,
nice
and it doesn't
phone.
Appear to have NFC.
Ah, does the G6 not have NFC? Okay. So there's other solutions. So YubiKey is a category. It's a company, Yubico, that makes the YubiKey, but it's a category of devices called dongles that in right. some way provide you with this hardware authentication. So you use it in conjunction with a password. And the idea is, well, the bad guy would not only have to guess your password and log in, but he'd also have to somehow get this hardware dongle. And that gives
right.
you some real security. It's a really nice idea. There's a downside to it. It's inconvenient. If you lose the dongle, then what? And there's all sorts of. But if you've, there are a few accounts where you really don't, you were willing maybe to take a little extra time to secure your email account being number one. If a bad guy were able to get access to your email account, then all they do is go to all the other accounts and say, oh, I forgot my password. Could you send me a reset? And they'd get into everything. So your
right.
email account. Maybe it's worth having a little extra trouble to get into it. So the way they solved this, and Google solved it they have a Google kind of super authentication system that is really tough, and they've been using it internally for some time, and they said it's been great. Not one of our 10,000 employees using this has ever been phished. That's another way you can get bit is with phishing scams. So they do make YubiKeys and other kinds of keys that work with Bluetooth. Actually, I don't know if YubiKey makes one, but there are other companies that make Bluetooth authentication keys. And Google has an application that will work with these. So, because you need a separate application that's either on iPhone or Android. And you set up this secondary Google authentication app, and then it can see the Bluetooth key and see the code and say, okay.
Okay.
So I'm certain that will work with Moto X. So one thing to do would not get it from let me see where Google is selling these, because they've started selling these maybe on the Google store. Let me check. They sell keys that are Bluetooth as well as USB, and so they'll do both. And that's probably what you want to get. Let me go to store.google.com and look at the accessories. I wonder where they're selling these, because I've seen that they've started selling them. It doesn't look like it's on the Google store itself. They sell all sorts of silly stuff, but not that.
I was really bummed not to be able to get that YubiKey.
Yeah, I really like it. And it works fine on a computer with a USB port, but you're right, with phones, it's a little trickier. Google calls it the Titan, T-I-T-A-N, security key.
Okay.
And it's as good as a YubiKey. I actually was a little upset because I thought, oh, you know, they're going to put YubiKey out of business here. But Titan has a hardware chip in it. You can get it. Yes, you can get it at the Google store. Or if you just Google Titan security key. And it works okay. Pretty much the same way, and it will work with your Motorola G6. Absolutely.
Because I bought that phone based on another recommendation from somebody, another show that's on KFI. And he said, if you don't want to be, you know, tied down to having to pay for your phone, this one works really well.
I completely agree. In fact, I just recommended the new one they just put out. The G7 just came out, and I just recommended it last hour. So I've always recommended. These are my absolute pick for inexpensive Android devices. I think they're very good. So the Titan security key is actually two, a Bluetooth key and a USB key, and it's $50 for the both of them. And you'll keep it on your keychain. It'll work with your phone. The Bluetooth one will, and the USB one will work with your laptops.
Okay. You know, if these work like with your banking, with a lot of banking applications, because YubiKey said that they work with most like Facebook and Google and everything.
Depends on your bank. My bank does not. But you know, they do two-factor, but they do that less secure, send a text message. And you obviously heard me last week saying why that's less secure.
Right.
It's better than nothing. So if they have it, turn it on. But don't assume it's 100% secure, because bad guys now know how to hack these text messages.
Okay.
And it happens quite a bit, unfortunately. So
I was nervous.
Ideally, you'd either you, you know, and all banks will let you do this, use an authentication program like Google Authenticator on your phone. You can do that. Okay. That's free and there's no setup. It's very simple. And that's much more secure.
Okay.
But, of course, the most secure would be a hardware dongle. Then somebody who didn't have, you know, your keys wouldn't be able to get in.
Okay, so is this Titan security key, is this a hardware dongle?
It is it's two hardware dongles, one Bluetooth for the phone and one USB for the laptop.
All right, looks like I'm going shopping at the Google store.
Google store, $50, that's a fair price.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure, I'm glad you asked about this. One point I'm going to make, not specifically for you, Cheryl, but in general, is we mentioned how it's better to use two-factor than single-factor, because then a bad guy not only has to guess or crack your password, but they also have to get this second factor, which could be a physical device, could be a text message. Text messaging is the least secure because there's a couple of ways bad guys can intercept it. One is by impersonating you, something called simjacking. Another is just taking in software, taking advantage of this. And in fact, I think just this week there was a big theft of millions of dollars of cryptocurrency using SMS jacking. It's very easy to do. So we don't really trust text messages. Now, the good news is somebody would have to target you. They'd have to say, well, we want to get Cheryl's bank account. So let's get her password. Good, we got that. Now let's get her phone number and get her text message, and we got that. So they have to really be going after you specifically. It's not a mass targeting attack. You really have to go after somebody. The bad news is almost everybody who uses two-factor, certainly every bank, falls back to text messaging. So they say, oh, yeah, you can use your Google Authenticator or maybe even your YubiKey. That's great. And then there's a button, and you should always check this. Is it having trouble? Forget your YubiKey? Don't have your phone with you? Click this button, and that will almost always fall back to text messaging. Whatever the weakest link is in this chain is the one you should pay attention to. So if at any point text messaging can be used for two-factor, that's a problem. You should call the bank and say you need a better solution. Google, as an example, Gmail, you can say, I don't want text messages. But banks deal with real people. They're worried that people are going to get locked out of their account. They don't want that to happen, so they fall back to text messaging, which, as we know, is insecure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That Johnny Cash theme song means that the other Johnny is with us. We go from Johnny Cash to Johnny Jet, our travel guru. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
You're home.
I've been home for over a week. I leave this week for another trip. My first flight in, like, I think 2 weeks.
Yeah. You needed it. You needed rest. You need to recover.
Big time.
Relax.
Big time. It feels so good to be home.
Yeah.
Catch up. Yeah. But, you know, it's also time to get back on a plane and do what I do.
Where are you going?
That's a secret.
He'll never tell me. I try every time. I try to trick him. I got to come up with new schemes.
It was interesting. We're in a commercial hearing about your trip to L.A. and how you were, checking out Uber's jump bikes. That is the future for a lot of these cities.
Yes,
bikes and the scooters.
And I apologize for not popping in, but we didn't want to pop in on you. We only had a little time. So, but we were staying in Marina del Rey, and there were two of these bright orange Uber electric bikes, the jump bikes, right outside. And we thought, well, we should try these. Because, I'm an electric bike fanatic. And it was so much fun. And you're just whizzing around. And I feel like it's safer than a scooter. I'm not good on a scooter.
Right.
But on a bike, I can handle myself. And
I love those electric bikes. The first time I rode one was the Scenic River Cruises. I think
so much fun.
The only ones that have it. But what a difference it makes.
Oh, it's much easier. Yeah. Yeah, and I love it because Marina del Rey has nice bike lanes and bike paths. And so it was very safe, I felt, and a lot of fun.
And you said it was cheap.
Yeah, I don't know what it's 15 cents for to turn it on. And I don't remember what the mileage thing, but it was a couple of bucks to go from Marina del Rey to Santa Monica, which is about, 2 or 3 miles. So it wasn't too expensive, and it was fun. And then you leave the bike there. We walked around, picked up two other bikes, came home.
And when you picked up the other bikes, did you look for them or did you look on the app for where they were?
The app has dots, but you can't miss them. They're bright orange. We're in Venice, and the streets are littered with them, so it wasn't too hard to find.
Yeah.
It was very nice.
They don't have them.
Yeah, I think that you're seeing in a lot of jurisdictions, like San Francisco, they're prohibiting them, or they're limiting them to a certain number or a certain number of companies. I think the scooters were a first start, but I like the bikes. I think that's a much safer alternative. And you don't ride them on the sidewalk. You don't. It's so easy to ride the scooters on the sidewalk.
San Francisco's limiting them?
There were. And so the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco said, okay, we're only going to allow two manufacturers, Skip and Scoot.
Which not sounds even like Bird and Lime.
No. They kicked Bird and Lime out. In fact, I think Lime sued.
Wow. I didn't realize
they lost.
There were so many.
Yeah, it was just a real problem, as it has in many jurisdictions now. And so they said, well, we're going to do a test with Skip and Scoot. And I bet you they limit the number of scooters as well.
Okay, well, that's good to know. But it is, I was in San Diego a couple weeks ago, and, they were all over the place. Everything, bikes.
Yeah, it's a problem. Yeah.
But, I was going to take one, although I was with my son. But one of my buddies did. He said it was awesome. He just jumped on one. It cost $2 to go. He went to to Macy's, I think. And,
it solves the last mile problem. And I'm hoping eventually it will solve traffic congestion in big cities. It's really gotten hard to get around most cities nowadays.
It has. But speaking of San Diego, by the way, so my app is somewhat related to it. So a new technology, or I don't know if it's new, it's a Danish company called BlipTrack, BlipTrack. And they just did a deal with New York airports, so JFK, Newark, LaGuardia, and Stewart International in New York. But they also have the technology in San Diego. And so what it does is if you go onto these guys' websites, if you go to JFK's website or Newark's or LaGuardia's, it will show you real time what the TSA lines are, how long they are, parking, taxi stands. And in San Diego, I think it's just the taxi stands right now. But I think this is going to be the future because what a difference it makes. And I just went on to LaGuardia's website and I hit the real-time tracking for TSA. And it shows you by terminal, by security post, and it will show you a TSA pre-line and also the regular security line. And most of the time the TSA pre-line is much shorter. It was like 2 minutes for TSA pre and maybe 11 minutes for the regular line.
This is amazing.
So this is going to be the future of travel. I mean, because that's one of the big things when you're like, what time should I leave for the airport? And I know that, you know, I talked about my TSA app recently, but that was historical, also on user generated. These guys are using sensors and it's real time.
Wow.
And it's
fascinating.
But for Newark Airport, by the way, they don't have United's permission, I guess, yet. So whatever terminals United's in, I can't remember because I have not flown United out of Newark in a while. It will just say pending. But there you go. You're on. I don't know which.
This is JFK security wait times for both TSA pre and general. This is amazing. That's so great.
Yeah. And it shows Saturday is a great day to travel. And as you can see, the wait times are not
short.
Long.
Yeah.
But so before you go to the airport, check it out, especially the New York airports. See what the security.
Do you just go to the website of the airport? Blip doesn't have a consumer app.
It doesn't do with Blip. No, yeah. They don't. I wasn't going to mention Blip. I just.
Well, it's nice. I like to know who's doing it. That's kind of interesting.
That's what I figured you would.
Yeah.
It has nothing. The consumer does not even know about them. Just go on to JFK's. You just type in JFK Airport or LaGuardia, whatever airport you're flying out of, and then it's right there on their homepage. It will show you, what do you want, and it also shows the parking, how much parking is available.
Really nice to have, especially if you're flying on a busy weekend.
Without a doubt, and so I think this will really help travelers save some time and also some anxiety.
Yeah.
But when you look at that, TSA pre is the lines are always much shorter. So that's another reason why you want to get TSA pre.
Right. Well, in Terminal 2, there's no wait for the regular line. There's a 1 minute TSA pre line.
Wow. Okay. So, well, you know what? That does happen once in a while. And when that does happen, although I still would rather wait.
Well, you have the choice. Even if you're pre, you can take the regular line, can't you? Or maybe not.
But I have seen a TSA pre so long that I have gone in the regular line, but very. Not often, because it's usually, you have to take your shoes off, your belt, your laptop out, and you don't when you go through TSA pre.
I have a friend that works TSA at our local airport here, so I always go in his line. It's called the Leo pre line. I love it.
Okay. And you know what? I forgot to mention the last couple of weeks. When I flew to New York 2 weeks ago, I was, I always log on to the internet, and it's GoGo or Viasat. On the JFK LAX route, and I have my phone, my phone's in airplane mode. It's online. And also my phone was ringing, and I was like, that's the first time it's ever done that. So I decided to answer it. It was my buddy. And sure enough, we're talking clear as can be. And I'm like, he's like, where are you? I'm like, I'm over Colorado right now. He's like, you're joking. So I don't know if I should have been talking about this.
You're not allowed to do that and make phone calls on airplane Wi-Fi. That's pretty impressive, though, isn't it?
Well, then I walked back to the galley, and I saw the flight attendant, and I'm almost 100% sure the flight attendant was on the phone. But again, they were talking really softly like I was.
Right.
My seatmate did not know I was on the phone. No, that's how soft I can speak.
Talk like this, I'm on a plane. Instead of, you'll never believe where I'm talking to you from.
Well, that's what I'm afraid about mentioning this, because you know what? So many people will be. They're like, oh, my God.
Oh, I was on the flight a couple of days ago. There's some guy doing his business in the top of his lungs in the middle of the plane before we take off. And I just got – everybody can hear you, Stop it.
These days, most people are speaking on their speakerphone.
Oh, no. I mean, that's the Kardashians. I blame the Kardashians for that. If it weren't for them, we'd be living the life. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
So that's good to know that there's enough speed. I'm actually pretty impressed. And if you're a T-Mobile customer, which I am, you get free. And a lot of times you get an hour free just by – like on the, I got an hour free.
You get the whole flight free for texting,
right?
And you get an hour free of internet.
Yeah,
but again with this, and on the flight back, I tried it again. I called my dad. I called my wife. It worked, no problem. So, and I was
they would block it if it were a problem. They could block it. They would block it if it were a problem. They don't.
Well, I don't know if it's just so new that they don't know about it yet. Because no other passenger. Although actually my seatmate, I think, made a quick phone call too, thinking about just to say that we're about to land.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got my T-Mobile bill and there was no extra charges. So
you should look in probably in the fine print. I know it says things like you're not supposed to do Skype and stream movies and stuff. I'm pretty sure it says that.
But it wasn't only Apple to Apple device. My buddy was on Android.
Yeah, so audio doesn't use that much. So in fact, you're probably using less than the people watching, you know, the in-flight entertainment on their phone.
Yeah. Well,
there
you go.
They put a lot of bandwidth up there now.
They do.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just actually, I'll try it on my next flight because I'm not flying to New York. I'll see if it works.
That's cool.
But anyway.
Yeah, your phone has to support Wi-Fi calling, but if it does.
Yeah.
There you go. And the quality is excellent, by the way.
It's ViaSat. ViaSat is better than, and I think, I don't know if ViaSat uses Google or what, on GoGo, I mean, but I'll have to take a look at that.
ViaSat, so that's what they call it, ViaSat, not Boing or GoGo?
Boingo, no. Yep.
No.
You call it ViaSat, but you can log in. I have a GoGo account, so I can log into that.
Oh, interesting. So they're related. Account. Oh, okay. Okay.
So you can use it. Although when I fly to Miami, I usually take the 777. You know, that's Panasonic. And
oh,
I can't
really?
Use GoGo account. So I have to spend $17 to log on to the Wi-Fi.
Hey, at least they have Wi-Fi.
Without a
that's
doubt.
That's nice. They sure. We you know, little Santa Rosa Airport here just replaced their turboprops with Embraer 175s, which have Wi-Fi on them. And they're jets.
Yes, those are. I like
they're
the
Embraer. Nice. Yeah.
And it's 2-2 configuration, so there's no middle seat.
Yes, 2-2. And I love it. And it's so easy to get to Santa Rosa Airport from here. And then you've done that, right?
Actually, I've never been to Santa Rosa Airport.
They have very limited flights. But they have like one flight a day to Santa Ana and one flight a day to LAX. Seattle, Portland, LAX, Santa Ana. It's Alaska, you know.
Now that you're talking about it, there'll be more. They'll increase.
I think there will be more because they've been upgrading the waiting room and the runways and stuff. I think there are going to be more.
Well, and no one wants to deal with the weather in San Francisco.
It's so great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess enough people come to the wine country, either Napa or Sonoma, that it generates enough traffic for them.
So how far of a drive is it from Petaluma?
20 minutes. And the parking, nice. You just park right there. It's easy. It's like, it's kind of like John Wayne, only like even easier.
And how much is parking? It's got to be cheap.
Cheap. I think for 2 days it was $35.
Okay.
Not even the long-term lot, just the lot right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. Yeah. Well, I hope you have a great week. Next time you come to L.A., let me know. I'll pop by.
I'd really like to see Johnny.
I'll jump on the freeway overpass. I'll
wave as you go by. Thanks, Johnny.
All right.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's talk high tech. John in Los Angeles. Hello, John.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, John.
Hey, Leo. I've got a MacBook Air 2015. I'm running High Sierra. And I noticed about a year ago, maybe when it was upgraded to High Sierra, I click on links from one website. And in addition to taking me to the link, it opens a new window and to some other advertising.
Oh.
And I'm wondering, is that, and I was, while we're waiting, I tried it on Firefox. I don't know if it happens on Firefox. Is that something you've heard about in Safari?
Yeah.
And is there anything I can do to stop that?
It's a browser, what they call them technically, a browser hijacker object. And this can happen to any browser on any operating system. Even Windows, I mean, even Mac, which we normally kind of think of as, it's just safe. But, you know, a computer's a computer. So the first thing to do is look at your Safari extensions and see if there is a Safari extension you don't recognize. Chances are that's it.
What do you mean a Safari extension? In the hijack window?
No, in Safari. If you open up Safari and go into the settings, you can look at extensions, believe it or not.
Okay, Safari extensions, okay.
And just see if you've got anything in there that you didn't install. That's not one of the one I installed.
I see.
Yeah. I have a few.
What's Kablock? You know what Kablock is?
That's it.
Oh, that's it.
I think that's almost certain. K-A-B-L-O-K or O-C-K?
K-A-B-L-O-C-K, yeah.
Kablock. No, that's a... That's interesting. That is a Safari browser extension that blocks an artisanal selection of advertisements and trackers. So you probably installed that. It's ad blocking. I would take that off. I'll tell you why. The word artisanal in this context seems odd. But so you didn't remember installing that, huh?
Well, I don't remember installing any of those, but you know, when I opened it while we're talking, I see that. I don't know what that was.
Well, if you didn't install it, I would take it out. It should be things that you know that you installed. And if there's something in there that you didn't install, I would be a little concerned. I actually, for Safari's, for web ad blocking, I use a program called Wiper. But Kablock looks like it's okay. What else is in there? Anything else?
How about Wiper, W-I-P-R?
Yeah, that is the one I use, and that one you can trust, W-I-P-R. There should be four of those, or three.
Okay.
What else is in there?
I've never looked at this. I've got a whole bunch of them.
Uh-huh. One of them is the culprit.
And, but let me ask you this. When it says it's an ad blocker, could an ad blocker be the
Sure, because if you're a bad guy, and that's why this word artisanal bothers me. What is an artisanal selection of advertisements and trackers? It could be good. It could be, in fact, the thing is, it's in the App Store. I think it's probably does what it says it's going to do. You don't need that and Wiper, but you could use it. There's no harm there. Keep looking, though. There's going to be something that's going to say, like, better ads or, you know, there'll be a name that implies it's a good thing, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little paranoid. Just another quick question. I'm paranoid about storing passwords online in some, you know, central location. Is there one that you think is good and safe?
Yes. They're an advertiser, though. I want to give you the disclaimer, but it's the one I use. I've used for 10 years. The one we use in our business is called LastPass. There's others, though, that are, just to be ecumenical, I'll mention 1Password is also very good. There's one for Mac called Dashlane, a lot of people like. Any well-designed password manager is going to be a lot safer than any other solution you have, including storing it in the browser. Now, if you only use Macs and you only use Apple, you can use Apple's keychain facility, and that is absolutely secure. But its disadvantage is it only works on iOS and Macintosh. If you used anything else, you wouldn't have access to those.
And by the way, I'm still on my Safari extensions. How do I get rid of this Kablock if I wanted to take it off?
You can uncheck it or remove it, uninstall it. It may not be sufficient, I should say. I mean, there is an uninstall button whenever you check, click on one of these extensions, you can uninstall it. I would uninstall anything you didn't know you needed.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Leo. Love your show.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening. Sometimes browser hijacker objects dig deeper into the operating system. Or could be coming from another source. But if every time you click a link, two windows open, one is the link you're going to and another one is an ad, that's probably not coming from the website you're going to. If it only happens on certain sites, then that's something, by the way, a website could do, could generate that second page. But if it's happening every time, then that's probably an extension, something in your system. And I do recommend password managers. You made a good point, John, which is, well, I'm nervous about storing all my passwords in a single place. That is exactly the right question to ask because, you know, you're putting all your eggs in that one basket. It's convenient because it remembers all your passwords. Most password managers generate good, strong, unmemorable passwords. So we need some sort of solution for this. I mean, nobody should remember, you know, 200, 300, 1,000 you know, non-memorable phrases. That's not useful. You'll remember with a password manager one phrase to unlock your password manager. Turn on two-factor. A good password manager will have additional protections. And what you're really looking for is a password manager that does not give the company access to your password. You're looking for a password manager that decrypts only on your computer or your phone and not anywhere else. And then that means even a bad actor at that company couldn't get access to it. The bad guys would have to crack into the company, download the password vault, and then spend time trying to crack it themselves. And a company, you know, a good company, what LastPass does is something called PBKDF2, which is a method to thwart this kind of brute force It's a key derivative function. And what they do is 100,000 derivatives. So that means every time you try a password, you have to go through a huge computational cost. And that is enough usually to stop password brute forcing. I hope I'm not getting too techie here. Let's put it this way. A good password manager is going to do a lot of things you don't even know about to secure your password vault. And always it's better to use a password vault than to use the same password over and over, or to write passwords and stick them on post-it notes to your screen. All the things we've done up to now. Use your maiden name and your birth date. None of those things are good solutions. I was really pleased that LastPass just upgraded their PBKDF2 to 100,000 iterations. That's a very significant step up in the difficulty in brute forcing it. And that's the kind of thing you want. A company that really pays attention to this stuff and uses them. Got really geeky there. I apologize. 80. if that went over your head, suffice to say, a password manager is a good thing. Everybody ought to have one. That and a two-factor, and you're on your way. You're on your way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to take a little break. Come back. More of your calls coming up right after this. I am, Dave. I just I added the fourth Minecraft server a couple weeks ago because Michael and his friends want to build a replica of Petaluma. And they said, we need a flat land. You know, no, just flat. No mountains, no anything for building in creative mode. So I made him a little flat land server. And then I do put some plugins into my Minecraft server. I have my own just for me. Doesn't have anything special. But for them, there's world edit and stuff they wanted because they're doing creative mode. So there's a few little plugins. There's a fast movement plugin I put in there and stuff like that. It's cool. Minecraft is fun. Minecraft is really fun. Oh, yeah, they've started. No, that's just a village.
Hello, villager.
Have they done anything? See, it's absolutely flat. Except for this village. Flatlands spawn villages, I guess. I don't think they've done anything. See any building. Oh, maybe they have. What's this? Oh, that's just the edge. All right, let's disconnect there and I'll show you Twit. This is pretty cool. See, there's the Twit logo. This Chad, OMG Chad, and a bunch of other people built years ago, and I've been keeping it alive. It's actually not that big a build, is it? Michael and his friends have a massive build. There's some stuff. I wonder. I think people have been building stuff. Other stuff. I don't remember any of this. People have been busy. Pressure, pressure. There's a tennis court. Somebody's built a mansion. I don't know if these have been around for a while or. I'll show you Michael's stuff, which is pretty amazing. Oh, I'm in the gym. Those are treadmills. This thing is huge. This is the new Lego. I mean, this is what I would have done when I was a kid. Instead of Lego, if this had been around. To get a helicopter and a hospital and a subway. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart wallets, smart everything, password-based key derivative functions, all that stuff. We'll try to slow down on the PBKDF talk. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can still call, just use Skype out or something like that to reach me, 888-ASK-LEO, our website where all the answers to all the questions are stored for your later delectation, techguylabs.com. And that's open 7 days a week and is free. There's no subscription. There's no sign-in. There's nothing. It's like the web used to be. Just go there and read stuff. There's a good search engine, techguylabs.com. Tony in Linwood, Pennsylvania. Hello, Tony. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. I thought I had a one-part question, but it's a two-part question because I'm new to Mac.
It's fine.
The first part that I'd asked was on my iPad, my iCloud keeps giving me a message that I am 4.9 gigabytes out of 5, and I'm running out of space. I didn't even know I was using the space.
Yeah. Yeah. This bothers me a little bit. Apple gives you 5 gigabytes for free, which is, you know, in the scheme of things, actually pretty generous. I remember when it was a big deal to have a 1 gigabyte hard drive, so 5 sounds like a lot. But they also annoy you until you turn on backing up my phone or iPad or my Mac to the cloud, and pretty soon it starts to fill up, then they start to nudge you saying, you should buy some more. You should buy some more. And this is how you get to $10 billion a quarter in services. So it's a profit-making deal for you. So there are a couple of things you can do. For one thing, you can go and see what is on your iCloud. And you can do that from a computer if you log into your iCloud account, or you probably can do it from your phone as well under the iCloud settings. See what's there. Probably it's backups. And do you back up your phone or your tablet?
I do not, no.
Then I wonder what's there so you can go see and find out. And it'll all be labeled, not file by file, but type by type. So you can see if your music's getting backed up. Oh, I know what's probably there, your photos.
Oh, I have a lot of photos.
That's probably what it is. And then you can decide, well, you can turn off the backup and delete what's up there, or you can buy some more. It's not too expensive. Most people end up maybe dragging their feet going, all right, Apple, I'll give you a couple of bucks a month for more storage.
Now, the second part of the question is probably what led me here is I bought a MacBook Pro so I could use a Final Cut Pro X, and I'm learning how to use that.
Nice. So you're doing video editing.
Video editing, yeah.
Nice.
My wife and I started a production company. We're not out of the box on it yet, but
that's fantastic. And how's it coming along? You feel pretty confident in it?
Well, I watch the videos and then I on my iPad and then try it on my Mac. There's a learning curve.
Yes, believe me, there is. That's why you make money doing it. Otherwise, everybody just do it themselves. Yeah, absolutely. Being an editor is hard. And I have a lot. We have, you know, I employ editors and I've always worked with editors and I have great respect for what they do. I do not have the patience.
And with that, and this might be a similar thing, I turned on their mail program and I only have a 256 gigabyte
Oh, yeah. You'll fill that up with video pretty quick.
Well, that's okay because I have an external one that I can put things onto using the Thunderbolt.
Good.
But it's saving all my mail. In fact, even when it's even old mail on my Gmail account, it downloads it onto the hard drive. Yeah. Now, how do I stop that?
Well, you can probably, you don't have to look at Apple Mail's settings, but you can probably tell it to, so you're using Gmail, which is an IMAP server, and technically an IMAP client like Apple Mail, when it's looking at an IMAP server, only caches a certain amount of the messages. The rest of it is just, you know, well, after a while, we're just going to get rid of it because it's still up on the Gmail server and you can always look at it there. That's the theory. And if that's okay with you, I think there's probably a setting in Mail to turn down how much storage it's using.
Okay.
So go look in your mail, and it may also be that you want to turn off saving attachments or only keep attachments for a limited amount of time. So Pop Mail, the old-fashioned mail, downloaded it and kept it, and then, in fact, deleted it on the server. But now that you're using a modern system like Gmail, the idea is let Gmail store it. You've got virtually unlimited storage there, and you keep a copy of only the most recent stuff on your Mac. So I think you're going to look at what the caching settings are for mail or something like that. I actually don't use mail on a Mac, so I haven't looked at those settings in a while, but I'm sure there's something in there. Most email clients will let you set that.
Yeah, I only used it because as I was setting up my MacBook Pro, it said here, you know, I was following the steps.
Yeah, mail's fine. Almost everybody who has a Mac uses Apple Mail. It's a good program.
Okay.
I mail is such a big deal for me, and I get so much of it that I need a power tool to power through it. So I use something a little more sophisticated, just a little. But I use mail. I used mail for years. I'm sure somewhere there's a setting. The only problem, you know, sometimes with Apple, they don't give you access to everything, you know, all the settings that a normal program would. So there may, let me see, mailbox behaviors. You shouldn't have to delete mail from locally from your Apple Mail. You should just say, don't save as much of it. But, you know, I'm looking at it. Maybe Apple defaults to saving everything just because they don't want to confuse people.
You know, I don't have my MacBook Pro turned on right now, but
I'm looking at the settings in Apple Mail, and I actually don't see a way to reduce its footprint to save fewer documents, and that's unfortunate. Powerful IMAP programs will say, "Look, only cache up to a gigabyte, because after that, I don't care." But it sounds like, and this is Apple often errs on the side of simplicity, giving people less control, because most of the time people don't care. They don't pay attention. Are you really running out of room because of mail?
Well, there's like a slider that shows you graphically how much of your drive you're using, and it looks like it's getting bigger.
So, yeah, well, it will be, because every time you get mail, it'll get bigger. You look at the attachments, because that's what can really clog you up, and there is a setting in there not to save attachments. That might help.
Yeah, I don't want to delete it and then, like, lose it from the server of Gmail.
Well, that's probably why Apple errs on the side of, you know, let's not risk losing mail, because somebody will get mad at us if we don't save it all. So it sounds like that's what they're doing. And I don't think you can tell Apple Mail to save it in a different location. There might be an advanced Mac tip that you can say, use my external drive for mail. And, yeah, you don't want to delete it because it'll delete it locally as well.
Yeah, I'm using up some space, too, but I think I can do this safely. I bought Parallels I could put a version of Windows on it.
Right.
And I hope I can move that to an external drive.
Yes, you can. Space. Those virtual machines are giant, I know, because each one of them is a Windows install. Yeah, you can move those externally. It's a new world. You went from Windows to a Mac, but the same concepts are there. It's just they're in different places. The big one is Apple wants you to buy more storage, and I would. It's not expensive. iCloud storage is not expensive, and it is nice to have that backup, right? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will be back right after this with more of your calls. You stay right here, 8888, Ask Leo. So it looks like, sorry, I had to I didn't mean to give you the bums rush. Oh, he's gone. Shoot. Well, I hope you're still listening. Chatroom points out that Google, in the Gmail settings, will allow you to say how much is saved on your Mac. In effect, by saying, well, only show this much. So look into the Google settings. And at that, if Apple, it doesn't look like Apple Mail will let you do that. The program I use on the Mac, MailMate, of course, will, and most good IMAP clients will, but Apple's, you know, doesn't want to confuse people with too much information, so they don't give you all those options. Too many options make for more support calls. So, but in Gmail, you can say, hey, don't synchronize mail older than 30 days, and that'll really help. That'll really help. Settings are confusing. I don't like settings. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Yeah, and what I do periodically is I go look at iCloud and I say, oh, yeah, that's that old phone, I don't need that backup anymore. You can clean out a lot of that iCloud cruft. But he has a lot of photos. He's probably saving them all to iCloud, which he might want to continue to do. I hesitate to say, oh, you know, turn that off. I think I buy 200 gigabytes of iCloud storage. That's sufficient. Where can I see that? Where is that? I just search for iCloud. iCloud Drive. iCloud Drive is on. No, that's not it. That's not it. There's iCloud usage, 174. Oh, yes. Okay. So in the iCloud settings, let's see if I can show this. So you wouldn't know this, but actually if you tap your picture at the top there, you can go to iCloud, see how much of the iCloud is used, and then manage storage, which will tell you in a kind of non-granular way how that storage is being used. So some of it's backups, some of it's photos, messages. So you can delete the things that you don't want to store. Like I'm storing half a gigabyte of Swift Playground stuff. That's crazy. I don't need that. So there's definitely stuff I could get rid of. 44 megabytes of mail. It's sorted by size. So backups are the biggest thing. And then even within backups, you can see, oh, yeah, two phones and an iPad. Yeah, that's all my current stuff. So I do want to keep that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you want to know what is eating up all your iCloud on your iPhone or your iPad, you just go to the settings. And there right at the top is your name and a picture of you. Tap that. I think that's a hidden area of the settings people don't know about. If you tap your name, you'll see there's a bunch of stuff in here. Lots more stuff, including an iCloud entry. And if you tap that, you'll see a graph of how much storage is used. And in the graph, it'll show in colors backup, photos, and docs, which are the big categories. But you can even get more granular if you press manage storage. You can then go through those various things and see. For instance, I have a 200 gig iCloud. 130 gigs of it is backups. So I go in there and I say, oh, well, you know, I kind of want that. That's my iPad Pro, my iPhone XS, and my iPhone XR. I guess I do want to back up all of that. 42 gigs of photos. Do I want them all up there? Well, I kind of do. But there's a button. If you want to stop using iCloud Photos and recover your storage, you can disable it. And then you'll have 30 days to get it back. But that, you know, you'll lose that backup. See, I think it's worth it. There are some things here, though. I see 447 megabytes for Swift Playgrounds. It's apparently backing up Swift Playgrounds. And that's a program I don't ever really use. So that might be a place I can get a half gigabyte back. Here and there, there's probably spots you can do. A little deletion, a little cleanup. Again, that's on your iPhone or iPad. Hit settings, hit your name, go to iCloud, manage your storage. 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Line 3, Paul in Erie, PA. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm looking to get noise-canceling headphones, and I'm kind of just wondering how they work. Essentially, I just want to use them as earplugs. You know, I just want to put them on.
Yeah, they don't work as earplugs. It's actually a great question, because once you understand how they work, you'll realize why they don't work for everything. It's a really simple concept that has to do with how sound is generated. If you think of sound as kind of smooth waves of sound, you can cancel out sound. This is a little mathematics here, by on top of the waves putting a wave that's the opposite. So if the wave is +5, if you put a -5, it will cancel it out and it'll be 0. So the way noise canceling headphones work is they have a microphone on them that takes in sound from the outside and then reverses the polarity to negate it. That works great for things like jet engine noises that are very kind of constant. It really works well for constant sounds. But if a baby goes, ah, you'll hear that. It won't completely get rid of it. So noise-canceling headphones, which were originally, I think, created by Bose for, the Bose line of quiet comfort headphones, those were really intended for air travelers. It was a way to reduce the, fatiguing noise that you hear. It didn't help, though, cut out, announcements from the flight deck. It didn't cut out babies crying. For that, I use in-ear monitors that seal the ear. And they're like earplugs, but they have music coming through them or voice or whatever you're listening to coming through them. And those are much more effective. They eliminate all sound by simply being like earplugs, blocking your ear.
Right. Okay.
So if what you really don't want is any distractions. Now, remember, if you're listening to noise-canceling headphones and you're listening to music, just putting on the headphones themselves really won't block out all sound. But if you've listened to music, it reduces the background sound sufficiently that the music overpowers it and you won't hear it. It does make a difference on an airplane. If I forget my headphones on an airplane, I'm sunk. But I tend to wear, I have noise reduction headphones from a variety of manufacturers. But I tend to wear in-ear monitors from a company called Etymotics, Etymotics. They're flanged. They look like earplugs, and they seal out the sound. And if I'm listening to a book, or I like to listen to classical music, I don't want to listen real loud, just kind of in the background. With those headphones, I don't hear any jet noise, babies crying. I don't hear any announcements from the flight deck either, so sometimes that could be a problem. But I do hear the music quite clearly, and I think those work quite well. So those are the two ways to go.
Great. All right. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Yeah. I don't think Bose anymore makes the best noise-canceling headphones. There are a number of other companies. I mean, the concept, the way this works is well understood. Phase shifting has, been around for hundreds of years. We used to, when I was a young DJ, you could do it to get the vocals. You ever do this, Big Pee-wee? Get the vocals out of a song. You had to have a turntable, and you would flip the polarity of the wires on the turntable, and if the singing was in the center channel, it would cancel out anything in the center channel, but keep anything in the left and right channel, and often that would take out the singing.
Yeah, do it all the time, DJing.
He says he does it all the time as a DJ. So it's that same technique. What are the best noise canceling headphones? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Some people in the chat room say they like Sony better than Bose. I've used the Sennheisers. I like them quite a lot. There's newer companies in the business like Plantronics that do a very good job too. So I'm not sure what the best ones are anymore. I think Sony is widely preferred to Bose lately. Let me see what the Wirecutter says. I always like to see what my friends at the Wirecutter like. Their pick, the Sony H.Ear on 2WHH900N, the best multi-purpose noise-canceling headphones, $300. Then the Bose Quiet Comfort 35s. When noise-canceling matters the most, according to the Wirecutter, the QC 35 Mark II offers outstanding noise-canceling comfort and portability. So maybe they do the best. They've certainly been doing it longer than anybody else. Yeah, that's one where it's not a bad idea to go try them out. Headphones are a very personal choice. I don't, I wear headphones for work all day. wearing them right now. I love my AKG K240s, the headphones of the stars, but they don't do any noise canceling. Unless you turn them up really loud, then you can't hear anything. And you'll be going home and wearing hearing aids as a result. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Let's see, the GizWiz coming up. Dick DiBartolo, our gadget wizard, gizmo wizard. He'll be here in just a little bit with another crazy pick. The website is techguylabs.com. You'll find answers to all your questions. In fact, that'd be a good place. If you have an opinion, you want to put a little mini review of your favorite noise-canceling headphones, you can put them up there. It's no charge to access. We don't make you sign up to read it. If you are going to post, we ask just that you sign in with your Twitter, your Google, or your Facebook account. Not because we want that information, but just to put it. It's a little speed bump for spammers, that's all. TechGuyLabs.com. More of your calls still to come right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. DeLois in Torrance, is that? Am I saying that right, DeLois?
Yes, this is DeLois.
Hi, DeLois. How are you?
I'm well, and I absolutely love your show.
Well, I love you, DeLois. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Okay, so my concern is this. I have a Acer Chromebook, number 11.
How do you like that?
I love it. I actually love it.
So when I tell people to get a Chromebook, you're going, yeah, he's right.
Well, I would agree with that. But
good.
The problem that I am having is finding a printer that is compatible with this Chromebook. I do not print a lot, but when I want to print, I would love to have a printer. And the printer that I have is an Epson Stylus NX510 series. But when I hook it up, nothing comes out.
So Chromebooks don't have the drivers. You have to adjust your thinking a little bit as we enter the new age of computing. We used to be get a printer, you hook it up with a cable, and you print. Nah, can't do it with Chromebooks. The only printers that will do that is HP. They have a special HP extension for Chromebooks. What Google expects you to do is use a service called Google Cloud Print. In order for this to work, you need to have a printer that supports Google Cloud Print. Probably your Epson does. As far as I know, all the Epsons do. And then you need to set it up through your Google account. And so you'll say what kind of printer you have. And then what it does is it prints wirelessly. But both your printer and your Chromebook have to be online. They don't have to be on the same network. So you can print at home from the road even.
Okay.
So look into setting up Google Cloud Print on your printer. Do you have Wi-Fi at home?
I do.
Okay. As long as that printer supports Wi-Fi, and almost all modern printers do, you should be good. Of course, remember, you can always print at a print service. If you don't print very often, you can print at Kinko's or somewhere like that, set up an account with them, and then you'll just print to them. Cloud Print is really interesting because the idea is you can print to any printer that you know you've set up anywhere in the world.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Wait a minute, I have one more question.
Sure, of course.
I have, I'm having problems with my television accepting my DVD. I can get, I set the DVD up, which I think is right. The connections are all right. I have the red with the red and the yellow with the yellow and the white with the white.
Yeah.
But I can get a sound on the TV, but I don't get a picture.
Yeah. So most DVDs, you want to not use the red, yellow, and white cables, but you want to use HDMI if you can. The DVD player probably has HDMI out. Does your TV have HDMI in? Do you know what the HDMI cable looks like?
Yes, I do. My TV does because my TV is only a year old. It's a
modern TVs all do. That's the standard. But maybe your DVD player is older and doesn't.
Yeah, because the DVD player is like 6 years old, so maybe
It should have HDMI. What you're using is really the worst possible way to play back a DVD. It's the old composite video format, and that was what VHS, you know, VCR recorders used. So it's not very good quality. Your DVD is capable of better quality than that. So usually we want to use a digital connection, and those digital connections, there's two kinds. The most prevalent is HDMI. That's what everything uses now. And then there is something called component, which has red, green, and yellow cables. But those are just video. Those don't do audio. So okay. HDMI, look on the back of your DVD player. Now, I have to say, if it doesn't have HDMI, you can get a new DVD player for under $50. They're cheap.
Right.
That okay. will. Yeah.
Will do.
Okay. Thank you very much. My pleasure. Oh, I can't imagine anybody make a DVD player that didn't have an HDMI port, but maybe many moons ago. Is it red, green, and blue? Is that what component is? That makes sense. RGB, yeah. Isn't there a yellow? No, the yellow, that's right. Yellow is the composite. So she was hooking up the old yellow composite connection, and then the red and white is left and right audio, stereo audio. So that is a pretty old-fashioned way of doing it. I'm not surprised she's not getting a picture. In fact, the TV probably is. What is this? What are you sending me? I don't recognize that. John, Dana Point, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, John.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear my name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Welcome.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I wanted to upgrade to a Note 9, but not this way. I have two major problems. One, my Microsoft account is now saying when I try to log in, it's giving me an error message referencing Active Directory in Azure. But the biggest problem, the most immediate one, is that my phone is missing, my Note 8. When I went in to Google to try and find it, I ended up going to the backup codes page, and this is where it went sideways. When I try and call a phone, it goes directly to voicemail. I think I may have left it on vibrate. I don't know if there's a way to override that or not. I don't have a list of the backup codes. I had them, but unfortunately, I didn't write them down on a separate piece of paper. The backup code page on Google doesn't give me an option to request a new code set, nor does it give me the second recovery email that I had set up. So I'm in a...
So let me see if I understand what you're saying. You've lost your old Samsung Galaxy Note 8. It's disappeared somewhere. It's behind a couch or something, right?
Yes.
Yes, and you can't ping it because it's not making any sound.
Correct.
Yeah. You don't think it was stolen. You just think it's you know, it's missing somewhere.
I think it's misplaced somewhere.
You're trying to get, but you have a new phone. You have a Note 9.
No, I would like to, but
I see.
But I
so you used with your Google account, you used the authenticator program that was on that Note 8 to log into your Google account.
Unfortunately, I was going to install authenticator, but I hadn't done it yet.
So you were counting on those codes, which they'll provide you with as kind of a last gasp. They give you a series of six-digit numbers, usually a dozen or so, that you can use.
Those.
But you've misplaced those. So is this keeping you from logging into your Google account? Is that the issue?
It says sign up using backup codes, and it gives me a choice of things to do.
But yeah, with those backup codes, they only give them to you once. You're supposed to print them and put them somewhere safe. They won't give those to you again.
They create a new set of 10 whenever you want, but that's not an option in this situation.
Because you can't log in, right? Is that the problem? So you have your password, your Google password and everything, but because you don't have the second factor has disappeared, you can't get in. Am I correct? Okay.
A second email recovery set up, but they don't give me the option to use that.
Did you set up a second phone number?
No, this was a second email. They give me an option to have
You can also set up a phone number. So I think you're going to have to call Google. And generally what Google does is, look, here's the problem. Google is, and this is something you requested of them, making it hard for a bad guy to get into your account. You said, yes, I want that. I want two-factor authentication. They need to authenticate you, make sure that you're not a bad guy trying, you know, pretending to be John, getting around John's system. So generally what they'll do, and it's kind of a pain, they'll ask you questions like, when did you set up your Gmail account? Do you remember the name of five people you emailed? They have a series of weird questions they'll ask you. So that's what you need to do at this point, which is to go to the I'm having trouble logging in page and then go through the steps, the rigmarole, to get your account recovered. In effect, you've lost your account because you've lost those codes. So very important when you print those codes, put them somewhere safe. I think, you know, they should give you the chance to recover through that email. And that may be the first thing they do this. You know, when you get somebody, they may say, oh, look, you have a recovery email. Can we send you something there? And you'll say yes, and then you'll be good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Woo! It is time for the disco king himself, Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer. You can ring my bell anytime, Dickie D. How are you today?
I'm good. And you, sir?
I'm wonderful. Feeling great. Dick joins us every week to share his favorite gizmo or gadgets. He kind of collects these crazy
I do, and this one is not crazy, and it's at a ridiculously low price. I checked right before we did this show. It's still on sale at BH Photo. So on Black Friday, I bought the Amazon Fire 8 tablet.
Oh, good for you.
And I want to have it on the boat to watch videos, and my boat is small, so my tablet will look like a big TV set because the boat is little.
And you sit 3 inches away.
Exactly. But I need it. All the phone holders are too small to hold the tablet.
Right.
And I get an email from BH that we have on sale the Joby. Now, you and I know Joby from the early days when they made the tripod with the bendable legs that you could hang on trees. And it said Joby has the grip-tight micro stand for smaller tablets.
Oh, look at this.
Okay. Leo, it's on sale for $8. Now, you probably have one of their micro tripods.
I do. I love it.
The little micro tripod sells for about $15. Well, this comes with one of those.
Oh.
That attaches to the stand for your tablet.
That's the problem with the grip tight. For phones, it works on phones, but it's not nearly big enough to hold a tablet.
No. This opens up to 5.5 inches.
Nice.
So it's good for the 8-inch tablet. The 10-inch tablet, it won't fit in. It has that little ball joint so that if you just and it's a standard tripod screw. So this can screw into the bottom of probably most cameras. And with the little a roll around ball that can move in any direction 36 degrees, you can actually straighten your camera out if it's on an uneven surface. So that alone is worth $8. But you get the whole micro stand for smaller tablet kit for $7.95 at BH Photo. And for some reason, shipping was free. I live in New York City, so I paid like $170 tax on it. But if you live outside of the city, there's probably no tax. So it's something worth checking out.
All the Joby stuff is great. And it's on Amazon.
They're in Petaluma.
I know. They're just on the road. They come over once in a while and say, here, have a stand. J-O-B-Y, the Grip Tight. I've used the Grip Tight for camera phones, and now they have a Grip Tight micro stand for something a little bit bigger, like a tablet.
A tablet.
And if you want to find out more about it, you know where you go? You go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. And while you there is a button you can push that says the Gizwiz visits the tech guy, but you can also see gadgets he showed on World News Now. You can see his visits to other shows, including, well, we won't mention other people's names. But the one I want you to click on is the What the Heck Is It contest. Only a few more weeks to identify. I think it looks like the nose in Woody Allen's Sleeper. It's some sort of odd proboscis or balloon inflator or something. I can't quite figure what it. But the thing is, you don't have to know what it is. You just have to say, you know, you get, there's autographed Mad magazines for the right answer, but there's more magazines for this cute wrong answer. So go there, read the rules. It's always fun. And you'll be playing for this, the issue 6 of the new Mad, produced by the LA staff, Dick says. But yes, you're in it still, right?
Yes, I'm in it. I'm in it. Several new of the old original usual gang of idiots are still in it.
Tell me they still have the fold in.
They do. Leo, he is my hero. Al Jaffe.
How old is Al Jaffe?
97.
Wow.
And still doing the fold in.
Oh man. I love Al Jaffe. And they're like oil paintings, right?
They are elaborate. They are incredibly elaborate. I don't think they're
maybe
oil.
They're acrylics, but then they reduce them down.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Oh,
magazine.
That's right. You were up to Mad.
I saw them. I was blown away.
They're gigantic
away.
When they come in. Yeah.
Really, really neat stuff. Dick has been a writer for Mad Magazine practically since the beginning and has so many great stories. Is your book, Good Days in Mad, still around? Can people find that?
I have about 10 cases under my desk. If you consider that still around.
Well, okay. Yeah. So, yes. So there is another link there called the Gizwiz Garbage.
Yeah.
Is that the place right to go there. Or Mad
That's
Collectibles?
Gizwiz. Oh, Mad Collectibles.
Gizwiz or Mad Collectibles. He sells all sorts of stuff, including copies of, I think, the best book ever written about Mad Magazine. And since I grew up with Mad Magazine, I know many of you did, I remember saving my pennies and going down to the local drugstore and counting out, it was only 35 pennies at the time, 35 pennies, saying, can I have Mad? I love it. Really awesome. Thank you, Dickie D.
You're a gentleman, sir. Thank you, sir.
Stick around if you're watching the live stream.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be here in a few minutes for our afternoon Giz Fizz. And, of course, Dick has his own podcast at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, let me see. I think I have a couple minutes left. Let's see if we can get one more call in before the end of the line. Mark in Irvine, California. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Leo. I've listened to your show for some time. It's entertaining. Kind of concerned about some of the problems that come up with computers, but it's tough to stay active in life or connected, so to speak. I've held on to the old flip phones. You're going to have to go deep in your archive. It was a VX8300. Yeah, I thought I'd get to laugh at that one.
You're not even the first person today on the show to be using a flip phone, so don't feel too bad.
And it's easy to use. I know when I push a button. I know when I answer the phone. I know when I hang up. So I'm using a borrowed phone. A friend's trying me to bring me into this century. And it's just, it's hard to answer. It's hard to hang up. They do all kinds of things more than I even want to do.
Yeah, they're barely, honestly, modern smartphones aren't phones. They're computers that, among other things, you could make in place a call, answer a call, but it's really not, they're really more computers. Think of them as pocket computers.
Okay, so my priority is still to have a reliable, easy-to-use phone. That's been line from number one. I had a tough time giving up my landline.
Do you have a computer of any kind at home?
None.
Oh, so you're looking at this would be your first, not only your first smartphone, your first computer.
Correct.
Yeah. You might look at keeping your flip phone and looking at a tablet like the iPad.
Okay.
Because then you're going to still have the reliable phone calls of your flip phone. Battery life on a flip phone or any, you know, feature phone is years better. Well, weeks anyway, better than any smartphone, which is never more than a day. And it's a lot easier to use. If that's what you want for phone calls, I would keep that and then get the benefits of smartphone computing with a tablet, especially an iPad, which is basically just a big iPhone. You can even make phone calls on it, but most people don't. That'd be my recommendation. Hey, we're out of time. I got to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to Big Pee Wee for our music. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for the phone calls. Thanks to you for listening. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. TV. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.